you are about to see the first public exhibition of an entirely new form of entertainment.
That belongs in a museum.
You are about to see the first public exhibition of an entirely new form of entertainment.
That belongs in a museum.
Hello, and welcome to another exciting episode of Treasury Cast, the show that celebrates the greatest comics format of all time, the Treasury Edition, proud member of the Fire and Water Podcast Network. I'm your host, Rob Kelly, and this month, joining us to talk about Limited Collector's Edition number C29, The Return of Tarzan. You know him on Twitter as Comic Foil. Welcome to the show, Chad.
Thanks, Rob. Pleasure to be here.
I'm very happy to have you here. We've been talking back and forth on Twitter lately. You have been, dare I say, blaming me and my little show for some dubious financial decisions you've been making lately in terms of gobbling up treasuries online and stuff. I've been impressed by how many of them you've been picking up lately. And so I invited you on the show, and you picked this Tarzan book to talk about, the second Tarzan treasury that DC put out that we have not yet covered to this point. It's a great book, and we'll get into all that. But, you know, again, you're new to this show, and so I want to find out, what's your history with the Treasury format?
I had an older brother. We were both huge Star Wars fans, and my mom was a reader. So when we were young, I mean, I was probably 6 or 7 years old, he got the first Marvel Treasury with the first half of the Star Wars adaptation.
Right, okay.
I got the second one. And so we had to share. So I think
good
it was
lesson.
A plot by our parents to make us get along.
Very smart.
We adored those books. I actually still have them. At some point, my brother got out of comics, and I kind of got his collection. And the covers are still hanging on, though I did get some copies of both of them, just to have a better set in my collection to share with my kids. But yeah, besides that, I didn't see treasuries a lot where I grew up in Ohio. But at some point, I got the Spider-Man Hulk Olympics, the Winter Olympics. Well, I guess it wasn't the Winter Olympics. Yeah, and I loved it. I mean, I was like, oh my God, here's another giant-sized comic. You know, I never get these. And so those were the three I had as a kid, and just loved them. And I took much better care of the Olympic treasury than I did my Star Wars ones. I moved across the country to California in my 20s. Then I moved across the country again to the Carolinas in my 30s. And I was shopping around, looking around for comic shops, and I found a real nice small place, very quaint. Didn't do a lot of business. And within a year, they were closing up shop. And I went there on their final day and everything. I mean, the place is cleared out. And I just happened to see a stack of very well-read treasuries sitting behind the guy while we were talking. And I was like, hey, how much for those? I goes, those are really cool. And he's like, those things? And I'm like, yeah. And I mean, he wasn't even thinking twice, but literally gave me about another dozen treasuries. And I loved them. And I read them to my kids. And it wasn't until I started listening to your show, and yes, I do blame you for this, that I ended up starting to actually go and looking for them at conventions and online. And so I went from three as a kid to, you know, 15 total in my late 30s, early 40s, to now I have just over 50. And most of those have been just in the last year and a half.
Wow.
Listening to this podcast.
Well, okay. I'm glad I could help spur the treasury market with my little show here. I mean, first of all, I would say don't blame yourself for the horrid condition of the Star Wars books, because that means they were well loved. That's exactly. You know what I mean? You weren't thinking about keeping them in mint condition. You were reading it over and over and over. And that's a great thing. I've heard some creators say, you know, comic creators, that they love it when someone goes up to them at a convention and gets them to sign something and it's really beat up, because then they know it's been read, you know, as opposed to handing them like a mint condition one that's just been in, you know, sealed in a bag away from, you know, all human experience. And so, you know, that's great. You love the Star Wars books, and that's a wonderful thing. And it served, you know, obviously it helped your mom teach you kids a valuable lesson. when you were buying comics, what kind of store was it? Was it like a 7-Eleven? Was it, because as I've said on the show before, I most of the time got comics at 7-Eleven until I graduated to comic shops. But 7-Elevens didn't carry Treasury. So it was only when we went to kind of like further stores out that had more of a magazine selection did they even have Treasury. So like you, I didn't see them on the regular.
Yep. Now, we lived in a small town in Ohio just outside of Toledo. And the only place close enough for my brother and I to ride our bikes was a West Haven pharmacy. And they had just a single spinner rack. And we first discovered it on road trips. My mom would drive by there to get, you know, drinks, candy, and my brother and I would get to pick out two or three comics each to read in the car. You know, we'd drive down south to visit relatives, and, you know, we'd trade them back and forth and fall asleep in the back, wake up, you know, with a comic book stuck to our face. You know, you peel it off and read it again. And that was the start of my comic book obsession. My brother kept up with me a little bit in the beginning, but by the 80s, he had dropped off, and it had become a full-time obsession for me. I love to read. I mean, I was reading books as well as comics, but I don't know, something about Marvel comics in particular really drew me in. I was a full-on Marvel zombie through the 80s.
Gotcha. Okay, well, so you've gone on to buy these on the aftermarket. What are some of your favorites? What are the ones that you were like, you know, that you've read now? And you're like, oh my God, this is so awesome.
Tarzan, literally. I think maybe my brother and I had one Tarzan comic as a kid, and that's how I started off listening to your podcast. I was listening to the ones that I had, you know, so I could read along and enjoy them. But something about your Tarzan podcast, the first one, listened to it, and the surprise ending, which I had never seen in a Tarzan movie as a kid, you know, on Saturday afternoons, I was like, I didn't know that. So that got me to go out and buy that. And of course, the Joe Kubert art is just phenomenal, who I've known for decades, but I, you know, he did war comics for the most part. I didn't read a lot of Sergeant Rock, so I wasn't really familiar with it. So I was just blown away by how gorgeous that book was, how good the story was. And that led me, of course, a couple months later to get the Return to Tarzan, just fantastic condition. So, I mean, I've just been thrilled with both of them. Easily some of my favorites. Outside of that, although I did just learn of an Eric Larson, what he did for Image. Oh, what was the name of it? I just
there. Well, yeah. I mean, they did King Size Kung Fu Bad Bible Stories, which that he was involved it, yeah. with.
Somebody was sharing some pictures, and I was like, holy cow. And I'm not a huge Larson fan, but he can churn out just some really exciting books and everything. And the art looked fantastic. And I thought I'd like to, that's my next big hunt online. I did a cursory look online, and they were like $50 to $75. Ooh. And I don't think I've ever paid more than $20 for anything except the 2001 adaptation, I think. Yeah.
Okay.
And I bought that in a bundle with like 10 others. So I was like, all right, I spent $100 on that one and like $2 for all the rest.
So it all balances out. Right. Exactly. I love that the comic shop guy that you bought them for said, you know, oh, those things, like you know that you're in golden when the guy refers to them like that, like, oh, just these old things. Like, yes, please keep that attitude during this transaction. Like, oh my God.
He easily could have talked me out of some money from my pocket and just handed them right across the counter. I'm like, thank you very much. Like, that was a good day.
That is just amazing. That's absolutely amazing. So, okay. Well, that leads perfectly into something else I was going to ask you, which is like your interaction with Tarzan is fairly minimal growing up. You didn't read much Tarzan because, of course, Tarzan has been, especially in the 60s and 70s, was a comic book staple. He had a Gold Key series for decades, and then that's where the DC series picked up with. And then as soon as DC got not got rid of him, but as soon as their license ended, Marvel picked it up. So he was continuously, and of course he was on television, he was continuously published all those years. But that Tarzan comics were not anything you really got?
Nope. I think my brother and I think we had a Marvel one with the Buscema art.
Yep.
But that was it. Didn't read the novels, although my dad was huge into pulp novels and stuff like that. He had Doc Savage novels, I remember, just lined across the headboard on his bed, and I used to flip through those. So he was really my big introduction to stuff like Flash Gordon, Buck Rogers, and Tarzan movies. And we'd go to the theater, or we'd watch them on Saturday afternoons.
That's fantastic. It's just fantastic. Again, me too. I did not. Tarzan was never anything I was terribly interested in. I remember my dad took me and my sister to go see Greystoke, The Legend of Tarzan, in 1984. But like, even that movie's kind of not really a Tarzan movie, at least if it's a little more kind of high. It's like Merchant Ivory's Tarzan kind of thing, which was not what I think as a whatever I was, 12 or whatever, I really wanted. But I mean, over the years, I've gone back and bought some of the Marvel Tarzans and certainly the DC Tarzans. And I can remember, during when we were at the school and talking to Joe, and he talked about Tarzan. He would talk about how much he loved it and that this was for him a real kind of pet project. Like, he really loved this and he fought to kind of get this put over to kind of get DC involved in it. And they went big on Tarzan. I mean, and it must have sold fairly well because not only did Tarzan get his own series, out of the gate, they then did like a Tarzan family book, like a Korax Son of Tarzan. And then he got two treasuries within like the first year and a half of them even doing treasury. So obviously, this was a big hit from the beginning. And this was these stories, in fact, the ones we're going to be talking about, they reprint Tarzan numbers 219 through 223, a complete story, which makes this book a little bit of like its own little, early trade paperback because it's collecting run of stories. And it's not only drawn by Joe Kubert, but it's written by him too. I mean, so he really went all in on this. But and by the way, of course, we'll have images for this on the gallery page. Let's talk about the cover. It's wonderful green background with you got Tarzan fighting off a giant lion, and there are some other animals in the background. What do you think of this image?
I love it. I'm hesitant to say I love it even more than the first one, which the blue dark evening background with the apes. The only thing that could improve it would is if it had been apes instead of lions, but I love the lions here. Tarzan's left arm jammed up through his mouth. I'm not really sure how a lion's teeth works. I'm a little afraid he's going to lose his arm there at the elbow, but it is just huge and energetic. I mean, it pops off the page, the two of them facing off like that, with him just holding the little dagger. And an odd thing I picked up from this is Joe doesn't like to ink the tips of Tarzan's toes very much. And I noticed it in quite a number of panels inside the book too. And I just didn't know if that was something he did a lot. And then I thought, well, he drew war comics. I go, Tarzan's probably the only character he's drawn a lot of toes with. And it was just a funny little thing that I noticed and that stuck with me as I read the book.
He had a very impressionistic kind of style. Like, I mean, you can see, like, here the grass that he's in is like rendered incredibly loosely. And that was just sort of his style. That was just sort of how it looked. I love also the I don't know who colored this, but I love the other animals in the background are slightly faded, which gives it a extra feeling of depth. And also the Tarzan logo, I think quite literally could not be any bigger. I mean, it is bursting off the cover. I mean, they're lucky that it's only six letters, so they can really make it big. But I mean, imagine seeing this on a newsstand, how this would pop
Oh
if you
yeah, and
saw
that pink
this.
color, that I mean, it jumps off the page.
It's absolutely gorgeous. So yeah, I mean, DC only did two Tarzan treasuries, and they both did re really, really nice job. So as I mentioned, this reprints five straight issues of Tarzan. Now, the Tarzan comics had multiple stories, so it doesn't reprint the whole book. It reprints just this one chunk of story from any given book. And the five story titles are Trial by Treachery, Fury in the Desert, Back to the Primitive, The City of Gold, and The Pit of Doom. And it's basically a long-form story of Tarzan fighting this guy named Nicholas Rokoff, who is this sort of secret villain kind of guy. And it opens with him luring Tarzan into this trap that starts there's this woman, and Tarzan thinks this woman's being attacked, and he goes and rescues her. And then you realize these guys that are not attacking the woman, they've been waiting to lure Tarzan to get the drop on him. Now, As I mentioned to Chad before we started, I attempted to write some plot synopses for these stories, and I gave up because not that the stories aren't good. They are, in fact, really good, but it just this Kubert as a writer, and especially for Tarzan, he's really not going for plot. Not that there isn't a plot here, but he really is focusing on the action beats. He is making Tarzan into an action character. So it felt a little silly writing out sentences of Tarzan attacks this guy, then he attacks this guy, then he attacks that guy. So we're not going to do that. We're just going to kind of talk about the entire book, and then we'll talk about the special features that it comes with. But just overall, when you read this, how long have you had this one, by the way, this Tarzan
book? Gosh, 6 months, maybe 7 months.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, I mean, what did you think of it? What did you think of it as a, you know, as a story, and what did you think of it reading it in this format?
The best thing, and I'm going to refer back to your first Tarzan podcast. I think it was Brian Hyler. Did I get his name right?
Yep. Brian Hyler.
Compared Tarzan to James Bond. And I was like, I've never seen that in a movie. So I loved this. I was, you know, Tarzan is literate. Tarzan is smart. You know, Tarzan plans things out. You know, I adored the story so much, both the first trailer and this one. When I raved about it on Twitter, I actually had a friend, Alan, who sent me all 24 novels. So I read.
Wow, that's a friend.
That's right. So I read the Return of Tarzan novel, then came back and read the Treasury again just to see, you know, what differences Joe did to the story and stuff. And it's interesting the things he takes out. You're right. He's very much a visual storyteller, which, hey, it's comic books. He needs to be. So, you know, it's like, you know, little side characters were dropped. You know, D'Arno, such a big part of the first novel and the first Treasury, you know, is very much a side character in here. But yeah, just seeing Tarzan travel. I mean, the Treasury starts off with him in Paris and the assault with the woman and everything. And that, can I just say on that first page, that bottom panel with her screaming is gorgeous, just gorgeous. But the book actually starts on the steamer when he's leaving Baltimore, going back to France from after leaving Jane and not claiming his heritage as Lord Greystoke. Which, you know, happens after the assault here in Paris. So Joe starts off the story with a bunch of action versus, you know, some conversations and a little bit of intrigue, you know, on a steamer. The thing that cracked me up is all these flashbacks take place while Tarzan is perched on a lamppost in the streets of Paris. So,
I love it. I absolutely love it.
How long was he stuck up there? So that cracked me up a lot. But yeah, I mean, the James Bond comparison was awesome, and I found it very true just with his travels, him becoming involved with the government, going undercover in Algeria. It's an amazing trip. The only thing that lost me, I hate to admit, is the Forbidden City of Opar at the end, which we can get to. But yeah, it went a little too fantastical, but I know when Edgar Rice Burroughs first wrote this, these were being serialized in a magazine. So these different chapters and everything, he's basically telling a different story every time in the magazine. So it's understandable how he jumped around like that a bit.
One of the things about Joe Kubert's work, I've always loved Joe Kubert's work. I loved it long before I ever went to his school or I met the man. And so luckily when I got to meet him, I didn't have to BS him. You know, I could just be, I could be straight with him how much I liked it. But, you know, it's a lot of artists when their work is blown up to this size, because, of course, they're doing it on the original comic pages, which are about the size of a Treasury, a little bit bigger, actually. But they know it's going to get reduced down. And a lot of them, I don't want to say used tricks, because that sounds a little like duplicitous and it's not really the way it is. But it's they know that their line work, especially if they're very heavy pencilers or they're in fact doing the inking, which is Joe Kubert's doing here. They know that any looseness that they don't want is probably going to disappear because it's getting reduced down. Gil Kane was big on that. Gil Kane's stuff, if you saw it full size, it doesn't quite look the same. And then you see it reduced down into a comic book page and you go, oh my God, this guy's one of the greatest guys that ever do it, because he knew how to do that. And Joe's stuff is so loose that you could sort of think, well, geez, you know, blown up at a full size, is that really going to hold up? Well, it does, because he's throwing in all sorts of line work that a lot of times when it got reduced down, got lost on the comic book printed page on the cruddy newsprint. Now, these are newsprint as well, of course, but you're seeing them kind of closer to where he drew it. And like that, you know, you mentioned the first page is the woman screaming, right? Which is a great image. But then you got the next page and you've got this splash panel where Tarzan is tossing like a dozen guys around. And I sat and I read this again after having not looked at it for many years. And it was just such a pleasure to take this in. And part of it, again, that Joe is writing it, he's writing it to the artist, which is himself. So he knows how to sort of structure this for the most action, you know, to get the most out of this action as possible. And as you said, then it goes to this flashback where he's sitting up in a lamppost and none of the gendarmes can find him because they're not thinking to look up on a lamppost to this guy that can do this. And then we get this extended flashback, but I mean, it looks so beautiful. He does these great close-ups of this Rokoff guy and Jane. And it's so absolutely stunning to look at. And then there's like this one page where Tarzan is getting yelled at, but you know, he's called, and I thought you as a friend, Monsieur Tarzan, not a debasing viper. And it's just this giant close-up of this guy, and it holds up beautifully. And it really is like, God, this Joe was just crushing it on these. This is just such a pretty book to look at.
Oh yeah. And the way he balances his artwork from panel to panel, I mean, you'll get the, like, you know, an extreme close up, like you were talking with the Count de Code. I think it was on page 15 or whatever. And it's just as gorgeous as that first page with the woman screaming. I mean, all the detail, the sunken eyes underneath with the anger boiling out of the guy's eyes. But then the panel right above it, even though you're inside this lavish, beautiful, probably mansion there in Paris, which you could see in, you know, one of the previous panels, the shock on his wife's face and Tarzan with this yellow background. It's like, where did the yellow come from? But it really makes the two of them pop. You know, the surprise of being caught. Tarzan's almost disinterest because he's like, I'm completely innocent. I haven't done anything wrong, you know. But Olga, of course, understands the situation, the eyes wide, you know, the thick black inks around her eyes to really make them pop. I mean, it's just gorgeous, gorgeous. It works so well.
Yeah, it is really, really beautiful. I love on page 18 of the Treasury, there's a half page that has to be filled by something because that's the original book was, you know, had these half page ads. And so they stick in Tarzan's animal facts. And clearly this stuff that's about, you know, learning about monkeys or elephants or snakes or hippos is from some puzzle book that DC had the rights to, or from an older 50s comic back when they were sticking informational stuff. And all they did was just shove Tarzan's logo on it to make it seem like it was related. I mean, it's related to Tarzan and that he's talking about jungle animals, but I just love, as a kid, I didn't sense any of that. I was like, oh, okay, Tarzan's Jungle Facts. But you look and you're like, yeah, this was probably made in around 1952. And they had a stat of it. And they're like, oh, just throw the Tarzan logo in there. And then it's Tarzan's Animal Facts. Like, okay, sure. I buy that.
Yeah, it's very clearly not Joe's art. And like H.T. Elmo in the bottom corner. I'm like, nope, don't know that name.
Yep, yeah. Something else I noticed about this story, and again, I've only read some of the Joe Kubert Tarzan books, you know, sparingly. I have a few on my spinner rack that I have. I buy them if I can find a cheap copy of one, I pick one up. There are a lot of women in this story, and there are a lot of women in a fairly high state of undress. There's a report where they go to like a belly dancer, and you know, these books were approved by the code, and they could never do anything too terribly salacious. But these women, I would argue, are a little sexier and a little more scantily clad than you could have gotten away with in a superhero comic. Batman could not have visited a club like this where there was a dancer in Gotham City. But it's Tarzan, and I guess it's sort of like Conan, which we just talked about last month, where it's kind of like, well, it's kind of a different world, and it's in the past, and I guess it's okay. And Kubert himself was not known as a particular good girl artist, you know, the way you have like a John Romita or Dick Giordano, who are famous for drawing incredibly beautiful women. But I really like the way he draws women. They're very light. They're very graceful. They're very full-hipped, kind of Frazetta-like. And there's just enough of salaciousness to it that I think it gives this whole thing a slightly, just ever so slightly more adult feel, which I kind of, you know, I really enjoy as a laughingly call an adult. It feels less like a superhero comic, which it kind of really isn't, and more of just like an adventure novel that's been illustrated.
Oh, 100%. And I don't know if you noticed, but I mean, the change in the women's hair, Olga's a redhead, the dancer who turns out to be the daughter of the Sheik, of course, a brunette, very dark hair. Jane is blonde, which I don't think I ever knew watching Tarzan movies growing up. That was a bit of a shock for me, seeing Jane as a blonde. And then La, of course, very sexy, as you said, full-hipped woman in a opar. No idea what color her hair actually is under that headdress, the white and yellow headdress. But, I mean, all of them had that distinctive hair color look, you know, and you're right, a state of undress or scantily clad, but they're all gorgeous, you know, and they're all, you know, in the stories. I mean, it's not Joe's stories, of course, but Burroughs, you know, potential love interests, even though Tarzan clearly is in love with Jane the entire time.
Right. Yeah. And again, you know, something else Joe was just great at is, I mean, I know I just said earlier that like he packed his panels with detail. And so when you blow it up, you can see it, but he also knew when to go minimal. And like there's a, on page 29 or 28, excuse me. There's a panel of Tarzan in his suit, just walking in almost total darkness. And it's a circular panel and it's almost completely black, except for just some highlights of his hands, and you see his shirt and his face. And then there's another panel where he gets thrown overboard, and you see it's just a silhouette. And there's no sound effects or anything. And the ship is represented by just a big black shape, just this big swab of ink. And there's not much there really, but it holds up, you know. I mean, it looks dramatic and really intense. And then on the pages before the break of the story, there's the ocean liner explodes and they have to abandon ship. And even that is drawn as basically just a big silhouette with some color highlights. And again, it's so beautiful to look at. Joe knew when, of course he did. He's Joe Kubert. He knew when he had to fill the panel, but he also knew when he could pull it back and be very minimalist and it would still hold up.
Yeah. I mean, this was what, 1973, 74?
74. I should have said this book came out in May 7th, 1974. So,
yep. And how long had been? I am not an art guy. I mentioned this before. Is I grew up very much a reader, and I gave a lot of credit, more credit than I should have, to writers for these books, especially reading Marvel with the Marvel way of creating comics. But I wouldn't find that out till my late 20s, 30s, how comics were made. So I never really focused on artists. So literally in my 30s and 40s, I really got into learning people's names, who, you know, who was doing this in the different styles. And 100%. I mean, it's like I said, it's like you said, the way he uses shadows, the way one panel's packed with detail, the next very minimal. It's cinematic the way he uses the shadows, moves around from close-ups to mid shots to pulling the camera back to show people on the deck of the ship and the ship's layout. I mean, yeah, I can't say enough good things about him. I wish I had read, you know, some Sergeant Rock comics growing up, because I enjoyed his art so much in these Tarzan.
Yeah, it's really amazing stuff. And so after that story break, we get a pinup, a double page pinup, which you actually have to turn the book horizontal to fully appreciate. And it's this great pinup of Tarzan and Jane swimming over a river full of crocodiles. And I don't know whether this is from one of the Tarzan books that they just blew up, or this was original to the Treasury, but holy geez, it's this thing. Like, this is what you, the average person, you say, what's Tarzan? This is the image, if not literally, but this is everything you would think of an iconic Tarzan shot. And it's just, I'm like, oh my God, make this a poster, make this the cover to a collected edition. It's just absolutely magnificent.
It is. Oh, 100%. It's a, I mean, Jane with the blonde hair, the ripped, you know, red shirt with, you know, without going into detail, you know, cleavage, even though, like I said, he's minimal, you know, it's not gratuitous. You know, three crocodiles. I mean, if you grew up watching Tarzan movies, you know, in the 70s or 80s, this happened in every single movie. You know, there was always a river, there was always crocodiles, and Tarzan was always saving, if not Jane, somebody from getting eaten. The only thing, and this is so small, the only thing that bothers me about this, do you feel it's upside down? When you read a book left to right, I feel like the picture should have been rotated.
Oh, interesting. Okay. So you mean the top should have been the left-hand page and the bottom should have been the right. That's interesting. Yeah, I guess so. It's kind of going the opposite direction of where you're reading it. That's true.
I feel like I'm turning the book the wrong way when I want to look at the picture.
So. I don't know.
From every angle.
Interesting. Joe must have been like, I want the crocodiles on the left. Like, okay, it's fine. So then the next bonus feature is a two-page How to Draw Tarzan's Animals by Joe Kubert. And he gives you an art lesson on how to draw elephants and lions and crocodiles and monk and chimpanzees. And I got to say, had I known this was a thing, my parents could have saved the $17,000 it cost to send me the Joe Kubert school. I just could have done this. Jeez, Joe.
Yep. I don't know how much you'd need to practice, maybe 20, 30 years to get this good. And I don't know how many 7 or 8 year olds would know where to get flexible pens and India ink, you know, but it is gorgeous to look at. And I'm sure fun for many kids and teenagers to try. Heck, adults, even these days, picking this thing up would probably love to take a look at this and give it a shot.
It really helps to have been drawing comics professionally since you were 14 to be this good at this point. Yeah. By the way, everybody, I will tell you, nobody draws animals like this. No, this is not how you do it. This is the, and I learned I could never draw animals to save my life. I was barely good at people. Animals were just impossible. So I was just like, oh my God. So that's, again, that's a great little feature. So then we get Tarzan after they've abandoned ship, and then he washes up on this island, and then we get another action beat where he gets attacked by a lion, and then there's an elephant stampede. There's an amazing full page shot of this elephant stampede. There's one of the like kind of native tribesmen who is about to get crushed by an elephant's foot, I guess you'd call it. I don't know. Yep. I don't know what their term is for their feet. It's not a hoof, so I don't know what it is, but it's a great. And then we go to this part four, which is the City of Gold, and that leads us to another double page spread where they arrive at this sort of forbidden city kind of thing. And once again, Joe is giving, like, this thing is like a storyboard for the greatest Tarzan movie never made.
It is the biggest city, forbidden city I've ever seen.
How would you even build this? How would you even start building this?
It is insanely huge. And yeah, I mean, it blows me away. I mean, how gorgeous, how huge. And he fills the whole right side. I mean, it's double page spread, but I mean, that right side is just all city and, you know, golden spires beaming in the sunlight. I mean, it's awesome. So I'd like to live there maybe.
Oh, seriously. So, but just as a side, do you have a particular favorite Tarzan, I don't want to say era of movies, but is there a particular kind of favorite Tarzan movie? Cause there've been a lot. I mean, there've been dozens and dozens of Tarzan movies.
Yeah. Reading these and then my friend Alan sending me the books, I mean, really kind of kicked off a mini obsession for me with Tarzan. So I've been watching a lot of the older black and white ones. I mean, I even watched the very first silent movie with Elmo Lincoln,
right? Yeah. Yep.
And I don't know if I have a favorite. I mean, I grew up, you know, Greystoke, you know, was the standout Tarzan movie of my childhood, and that's a beast of its own.
Yeah,
it really stands apart from the rest. I know I saw the Bo Derek one when I was a little kid. pretty sure my dad had a crush on Bo Derek because I remember quite a few Bo Derek movies. haven't watched it since, and you know, I know listening to the other podcast, I probably shouldn't revisit.
I can tell you, it does not hold up.
But a favorite Tarzan. I mean, I love the Disney one. I mean, it is. great songs, great animation, wonderful Tarzan animation with how he moves through the jungle. I love all of that. For live action, though, the most recent one with Skarsgård and
Margot
Robbie,
Robbie, yeah.
yeah, wonderful film. I mean, I'm so surprised. I was so surprised that movie didn't just blow up. I thought it was fantastic. Easily, that is my favorite one currently to rewatch. I've probably seen it like 3 times just in the last year. Once on my own, once trying to get my kids to watch it, and then once when I started getting into my mini obsession here with Tarzan after getting the treasuries.
Now you said trying to get your kids to watch it. Did it take or did it not take?
It did not take.
Okay.
So,
See,
teenagers these days, I don't know.
well, but I think, but I, the reason I asked that, I think that's instructive as to why that movie didn't take off is because I think Tarzan is just a concept that modern audiences are just like, huh? Like it just seems this kind of, I mean, I know the whole gist of it is that he's part of the royal class who gets dropped into the jungle. But I just think it's a concept that I think nowadays we just look at in a different way.
Yeah.
And it's just hard to kind of people to wrap their heads around. And so I really did like the Disney. I'm not a big Disney guy, but I really did like their animated. I thought it was beautifully done. Had a great movement. It has Minnie Driver is one of the voices. She's
Yep.
Jane in it, and I have a major crush on Minnie Driver. I always have, and I had hope, and it made a ton of money too. It was a big hit, and I had hoped that that meant they were going to do a bunch of them, but they did not. They just, it was like okay, they didn't. They didn't. Now I don't know. Maybe they did like some of the straight to video sequels that they've done with Aladdin and all the other ones, but they never did like another one that landed in a theater. So, I mean, I was grateful at least for that. I like the Margot Robbie one. I like you said, I haven't seen Greystoke in a really long time, but yeah, I think I've seen some of the Johnny Weissmuller. I mean, that was a staple on
Yeah.
TV when I was a kid. But yeah, I just think it's audiences have a tough time with it seems like superheroes set in the past. I mean, even when Marvel did Captain America, they kind of got him out of the 40s as fast as they could. You know what I mean? To get him
And
up
yet
to the
that's my
modern
favorite.
day.
The first one is still my favorite. Joe Johnson in with the first Captain America, the first Avenger, my favorite. I love everything
Oh, I
about
love
that.
all that stuff. Yeah. Oh, I
Yeah.
love all that 40s detail. But you think about like the Phantom, right? The Rocketeer, the Shadow, all this stuff from the characters set in the era that they debuted, and none of those movies did any business.
No.
I just think audiences just don't want to see that stuff. I do, but the vast majority of the audience wants to see things set in modern day. And I think that's, you can't do Tarzan in the modern day. So I think that's what's kind of sort of setting it back a little bit. But they
I would
keep
agree
trying
with
because
that.
he's Tarzan.
Yeah. I mean, you and I are probably of a similar age growing up in
Yeah.
the 70s and everything, and those Saturday afternoon serials really, those were the original superheroes.
Yeah.
Those were much better than, the Captain America movies they tried back then. As much as I love the 66 Batman TV series, not exactly, setting the world on fire, but it was great for a kid to watch. So, today's audiences, with the Marvel and DC films and just the effects, Tarzan, while one of the original, quote superheroes, doesn't have that same impact, with what today's audiences, the plethora of, movies and TV shows and video games that they have access to, it just doesn't have that same impact. Yeah.
Yeah. And, as a kid, he's superhero adjacent. So that's what gets you into it because he's kind of like a superhero. He's got, sort of extra level powers. And as we talked about, he was in the constant comic book series. So he feels like it's like a Lone Ranger sort of thing. We're like, all right, he's not really a superhero, but he's kind of, he's not just a regular dude. So it's that kind of, and I read the Tarzan books too. I read the Sherlock Holmes books. You know what I mean? Like they're kind of, those are the things that kind of guide you. Comics lead you to books, and then you kind of read those, and then you move on to other things. So, in the story, he gets into the city, and then he sees after he has another fight, he sees Jane has been strapped to this table by all these kind of like brutish cavemen kind of guys, and they're going to sacrifice her, of course. And then we have another bonus feature, which is a Tarzan word puzzle. by Bob Rozakis.
The Answer Man.
The Answer Man. Part of his job is to come up with these things. Now, does your copy have the answers filled in? Mine does not. A lot of my treasuries that I bought on eBay have the puzzles filled in. This one actually is in mint condition, this page at least.
Yeah, no, mine is, it is also mint. I mean, there's no writing. It is one of the best looking treasuries I have. So.
All right, good. Yeah. So then we get into the Pit of Doom, and I said Jane is about to be sacrificed, and Tarzan manages to stop that. He encounters the queen of this particular city. Then they get into the gold. He goes into the room with all the gold in it. Then they, again, him and Jane escape. They have another... they run off. There's this wonderful panel where Tarzan has someone else he's rescued, and then the guy dies. And the panel is just it's on page 75, 76. It's just this field of yellow, and it is just Tarzan and Jane and the guy, and that's it. And he just says, he's dead. And the whole panel has no detail at all. None. Yeah. It is just these three little figures in the center. And it's, you know, Joe, you know, bulletin everybody. Joe Kubert knew how to tell a story.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, the person who died is, of course, William Cecil Clayton, the current Lord Greystoke. And this is, of course, the moment when that title is passed, him admitting that he's known all along, well, since they left Tarzan behind in Baltimore, that he was actually the real Greystoke. But yeah, that yellow pop, I don't know how much Joe worked with his colors, but yeah, there are several panels where he does that, the minimalist background and the yellow just to pop. I mean, you gotta remember this is the west coast of Africa. There is a jungle 5 feet away from them, but Joe wipes that all away to just focus the reader's attention in on the passing of, you know, Tarzan's rival for Jane, you know, who he's never had anything against, was a good man, as much as the Disney movie would have you believe otherwise. Yeah. And then, of course, we turn right around and there's Rokoff, you know, swinging a shovel at Tarzan's head on the very next page. So right back to the action there.
Yeah. So then again, there's another fight scene, and then they defeat Rokoff. Tarzan and Jane escape, and then it ends with Tarzan sort of contemplating, where he says, I cannot put my thoughts of the strange city of Opar, or the face of La, high priestess of the Sun Temple. Will she continue to live on the edge of chaos among the beast men of Opar? And what of the gold, the vast treasure of Opar? And of course, it's going to lead right into the next issue, which is sort of a continued story. But for now, this is the pause that we need to end this book, and it ends on page 80. And as I said, it is like a little mini trade paperback, because it's a continued story from, and it has a beginning, middle, and end. And it's a really nice way to wrap this up. You know, you get a complete thought in terms of a story, but yet, you know, there's more adventures to come. So it's a really nice set of stories to put together in between two covers.
Oh, 100%. And I actually did a little research on the original comics, this reprint. The 219 through 220, so you got five full comics.
Yep.
But they added out 14 pages.
Yep.
And none from the first one. The 219, the introduction, the whole beginning, is uncut, unedited from that issue. And then he averages about four pages each from the next four, 3 to 4 pages. And it's funny, because I've read the novel. You know, there's a whole duel with the Count over him being caught, you know, in the house with her alone, that they cut out. And it's a great, great moment. And it's actually in the actual comic, though. It didn't get reprinted here. So it's worth tracking down those original comics, even if you do have the treasury, because of just wonderful scenes like that. The Count crazy mad, firing a gun, if I remember correctly, twice at Tarzan, him just standing there taking it. thinks he gets winged across the head, you know, with the first shot. The Count's so unstable about it, you know, that he misses with the second shot. And Joe just, I mean, draws all of it wonderfully, you know, stoic Tarzan, crazed Count, you know, gets it all back together, realizing this guy's not going to shoot back at me. It's a great little scene, and worth finding the original comic for that.
Yeah, absolutely. And I know I say this, I think, every month that we ever talk about this, but if you go to Mike's Amazing World, again, still an invaluable resource to every comic book related podcast out there, you look at the covers to these books, and they are just simply stunning. They're by Joe as well, and they are just so beautifully composed. They're just incredible poster-like images, and it is just such a shame that DC didn't put these in here. I know that they had to get the page count down, but I just wish they had spent at least a page, you know, maybe not give the animal drawing lesson or something and show, just give us, even reduce down the covers, because they're so gorgeous. And it's just such a shame that, you know, in 1974, I mean, yeah, you got these stories, but if you didn't get the original Tarzan comics, they're gone. As far as you know, they're gone forever. And they're just, you look at those, you go to the series gallery on Mike's Amazing World, and you look at the covers, and you're like, this is just one image after the next of just some of the most exciting comic book covers you're ever. And that's even during the, you know, early 70s when DC was copy happy with their covers. I mean, it had taglines and giant price bubbles and the DC bubble and giant logos and bonus features. It, like, I mean, they threw 75 blurbs on every cover, and yet it still is absolutely gorgeous. And I just wish they would do that. But again, that's the standard, is they, Marvel would run the inside covers on the inside back cover. They'd run a little postage stamp size, but DC didn't even do that. And it's a shame, because they're, again, they're just beautiful.
Yeah. I do enjoy, like, the word search is really cool. The giant, you know, poster in the middle, but I would, you're right. I would have sacrificed is Tarzan Alive?
Yeah. On the inside back cover. I don't know if
they had
a
publishing deal with that author and his book, that they felt like giving him a little word of mouth there to drive up sales. And like you said, of course, with the animals, not Joe's drawing, but the animal facts one, you could have easily squeezed in, you know, two or three covers there, two or three covers on the, on the back cover. I would have loved that much more than the Is Tarzan Alive? Philip Jose Farmer book.
So, yeah. Yeah, I was like, oh, well, all right. I mean, this is most likely written by E. Nelson Bridwell, or maybe Rosakis, but probably Ian B., because he wrote a lot of these things. And, you know, you got a lot of value for your money. I mean, your mom obviously was willing to spend a little more money than the typical comic book, because she knew it would take you a long time to read these things, because there was a lot to read. You know, this is comics for 20 cents at this point. This is a dollar. So this is five comics, but you're getting a whole lot to read. And so, of course, the back cover has a tabletop diorama of Tarzan jumping down from a tree into a bunch of gorillas. Now, since you've said most of the treasuries in your collection you have since bought as an adult, I'm going to think it's safe to assume you have not made any of these tabletop dioramas.
No, although looking at this one, you know, with Joe's art, I do remember as a kid cutting something up, because the little X's in the white areas, I definitely remember the struggle with the tiny red-handled child scissors trying to cut some straight edges and around corners and having trouble. But thankfully, I don't remember doing that to any of my comics, and surprisingly didn't do that to my Star Wars treasuries, though I'm sure I would have loved to have slapped those up on the wall.
No child with the kind of scissors that a child should have could do anything with this paper. It's too thick. You're just gonna destroy it. So, luckily, my copy is nice and pristine. So, as I mentioned, this is it. They never did another Tarzan treasury. I have to assume that sales didn't warrant it. That was pretty much only the reason they ever did anything like that was, you know, that's why there's only one Dick Tracy's, because as much as I love it, it sold poorly. So they never did another one. So this was it for, even though the Tarzan series ran for DC for at least a couple more years before handing it over to Marvel, this was it. But man alive, of the two they did, they are both absolutely superb collections. I mean, DC definitely gave the character as much of a sales boost as you could with these additions. Cause I mean, you think about this, this is like, Superman didn't have two treasuries by this point. Batman didn't have two treasuries, but Tarzan did. That's how much they were
Rudolph,
excited about this character. Well, Rudolph
had two
of course
at this point too.
Yeah. He had like six by this point, but we know that, you know, but I mean, it's a beautiful book. Now you have the other one, right? You have both.
Yes.
Do you think there's one that's a little, got the edge on the other?
That's tough, because the ending of the first one, even though it was spoiled for me by your guys' podcast, still,
sorry about that.
I, you know, no problem at all. I mean, you've got a very familiar story that I'd known for years, so there's no surprises there. I do give Return of Tarzan the edge simply because it was all new to me and everything. And even with the Forbidden City of Opar being a little, too fantastical at the end, story-wise, the James Bond aspect that Brian Heller brought up, I love that. I love this Tarzan, and I'm very excited to read more of the novels. After you and I talked about me coming on, I stopped reading the novels with number three just so I wouldn't contaminate my memories of the Return of Tarzan. I
That's
wanted
a
to
commitment
come
to
on
the
the
bit,
podcast
Chad.
fresh,
Wow. I appreciate
So
that.
I still have let's see, 24 novels. I've read three, so I still
Woof.
got 21 more novels to read.
Oh, my
So.
Lord. Okay. I don't think they were meant to be read in that kind of close succession like that. But yeah, they're both really, really handsome additions. And, it's a darn shame they never did another one. Why they did never collected any more Joe Kubert stuff together. I mean, as always, I always wish that DC had gone a little deeper into their bench to pull some of this stuff. I mean, it would have been awesome to do like Rima the Jungle Girl collection, but they're never going to do that because that book barely sold anyway. But we thought they never did Sergeant Rock. I would have killed to have a Sergeant Rock Treasury by Joe Kubert. It would have been so amazing. But,
I'd buy that
I,
one.
oh man, it would have been amazing. But at least we have these. And so they're both really, really handsome books. So, well, Chad, thank you so much for coming on to talk about this.
Oh, yeah, no, this was a pleasure. Really enjoyed my time here, Rob.
All right, so I have one question for you, and you can feel free to answer this or not because you might not want to give the game away. Are there treasuries out there that you want to hunt down yet and you haven't? Maybe you don't want to say it and drive the price up, but are there any that you're just like for whatever reason, not necessarily because of price, just because of opportunity and whatever, you're like, I gotta get that one yet, but you just haven't yet?
There's two. Obviously, the 2001 was the big one that I was willing to spend more than $15 or $20. But there are two that are out there I'm sure I'll end up paying more for. It's the Superman Ali Treasury. I don't have that
Oh
one.
yeah, okay.
The Batman Hulk Treasury. So both,
Oh boy.
yeah,
Two
both
big
original
ones.
stories. I've never read them in a reprint trade paperback or anything, so they will be all new to me the day I finally acquire them both. But they are on my short list for when I visit when I hit conventions.
Gotcha. So for Superman Ali, would you want to own the original or would you be okay with getting the hardcover reprint? Because the reprint is treasury sized. I mean, you can
Yeah.
at least still enjoy it in that format.
I would probably be okay with it, especially if I looking at the money, the finances
Yeah.
of it.
Oof.
But I mean, all of my treasuries are, original ones, and many are worn, so I wouldn't mind. I would much rather come across a well-loved copy than buy the hardcover. But
Okay. All right. At
over the
least you know
last
it's
six
out
months,
there, though.
I've really gotten into hardcovers, so I don't know. It could go either way. I guess it really depends on what I find when I'm out there in the wild.
Yeah, at least you have an option. It's funny. You go to conventions, and of course, dealers are looking to get they're slugging this stuff into conventions. They want to get top dollar because of course they do. But sometimes you can catch somebody not as generous as that guy you talked about earlier, who's just barely giving them away. But once in a while, you can find somebody that is selling them at a recent price. And then on the flip side, and I've mentioned this on the show before, like I was at a convention, I think it was the Boston Comic Con in 2019. Yeah, I went to that, and there was a guy selling the Welcome Back Kotter one, and I thought about buying it because John Travolta was signing things at the convention. I'm like, wouldn't that be amazing to have the Welcome Back Kotter treasury signed by John Travolta? And he was selling it for $50. I'm like, I'm not paying $50 for the Welcome Back
Not for
Kotter.
Welcome Back, Connor.
No, come on, dude. What do you? I know you're. And that guy probably figured the same thing I was thinking. Was like, oh, somebody will want to get this signed by John Travolta, who's right over there. So I'll charge $50. And I was like, and I already have a copy. So it's like, not only am I buying it, I'd be buying it twice just to get John Travolta. This I was like, no. But sometimes you can get lucky and find somebody selling a box of them for like $10 each, or 12, or 15. And if you could find a Muhammad Ali for like 20 or 30, it'd probably be in pretty fairly worn condition, but you might be able to score that, and that would be worth it because that is a magnificent book.
Yeah, the good thing is I'm patient.
Now, there
I'm
you
not
go.
willing to. I've got 50 of them to read and reread, over the rest of my life, and hopefully maybe my grandchildren someday. But yeah, you're right. The deals are out there. Literally, when I first started listening to your podcast, and I went to a small show, And there was a dealer, there were plenty of dealers with, some expensive ones. And I just kept walking on by until I saw a guy who didn't have a price, and he had a Doctor Strange, a Conan, and a Hulk just sitting up there. And I had to take them down. They were all in nice condition. I asked how much they were, and he was like, $20 each. And I'm thinking, that seems a little high. I go, how about 30 for all three? Immediately said yes. I'm like,
Oh.
sweet, $10 a pop. And I found out that that Conan one, I guess when I posted on Twitter, was a pretty hot item. It gorgeous book. Conan, Buscema art at that larger size, it's a win. So,
Yeah, that's a good that you that well done, man. I'm terrible at that. I get, you know what I mean? I never want to haggle. I always feel weird about it. But good for you. That's a fantastic deal. So.
Haggling, I'm not good at, but I'll throw a price out there that I'm willing. And, if he's a little high, if he comes down, I'll usually agree to it. It's worth it just try and get any kind of discount at those shows. I mean, especially if you're paying cash.
That too. And plus, they don't want to lug the stuff back. You know, they've made the effort to bring it in. They want to get rid of it because then they got to put it back in a box and put it back in their car and drive. So that's great. Good for you, man. So, well, Chad, thank you so much for doing this. I mean, again, we've been talking back and forth on Twitter, and I invited you on the show, and you told me you've never done a podcast before. And so I appreciate you being willing to do this. Not everybody is willing to come on a show if they've never done it before. So I very much appreciate you willing to come on and talk Tarzan with me.
I appreciate it, Rob. I admit I was a bit nervous before getting on, but you make it very easy to sit here and have a fun discussion.
Thank you. That's it. We're just talking two old dudes talking about comics. There's nothing to be nervous about. Why don't you tell people where they can find you on Twitter?
I'm just Comic Foil at Twitter. I pretty much talk 70s and 80s comic books and a little bit of new stuff. Mainly I'm revisiting my collection, making sure I reread that stuff. I'm also on Blue Sky. As a lot of the comic creators and stuff are migrating over, also Comic Foil there. So basically, search for Comic Foil, you'll find me on the web.
Gotcha. Okay. Well, cool. Again, thank you so much, Chad. I really appreciate it. And thank you all for listening. Stay tuned. We're going to run some podcast promos. And when I get back, I'm going to do some listener feedback.
Dr. Fate.
Dr. Midnight.
Starman.
Johnny Quick.
Wildcat.
Power Girl.
The All-Star Squadron.
Firebrand.
Amazing Man.
Huntress.
Cyclone.
Sandman.
Mr. Terrific.
Stargirl.
Commander Steel.
Power Seven Man. Soldiers of
Liberty.
Infinity Incorporated.
Those are just some of the celebrated and beloved heroes associated with Earth 2 and the Justice Society of America.
These daring mystery men and women banded together in 1940 to form the first super team in comics.
They inspired a decades-long legacy of heroes who would follow in their footsteps. And now they've inspired us to launch a new podcast.
Justice Society Presents, a new anthology on the Fire and Water Podcast Network featuring a variety of theme shows with different hosts celebrating some of their favorite comics and characters associated with the Golden Age of Comics, Earth 2, the JSA, and beyond.
Join the fight for justice and subscribe to Justice Society Presents on the Fire and Water Podcast Network.
Siskoid watches a lot of movies, like a lot. So now he has his own movie podcast, or several. Siskoid Cinema is your one-stop umbrella for a variety of shows like Fade In, exploring the first films of famous actors and directors.
This is a joke, right?
On Borrowed Time, discussing all your favorite time travel movies.
Whoa, this is heavy.
Why are things so heavy in the future? Is there a problem with the Earth's gravitational pull?
And No Escape from Kurt Russell. A dissection of the man, the mystique, and the movies.
There goes a perfectly good bumper sticker.
And more. Siskoid Cinema, a proud member of the Fire and Water Podcast Network.
And it's time for listener feedback, and these are the comments we got on Treasure Cast, episode 88, Conan the Barbarian, with my pal, Dallin Baumgarten. First up is movie Matt Sir Royce, who says, regarding whether Conan looks hungover or scared on the back cover. That's the look of a man who just realized it's 10 to midnight on April 15th and he hasn't filed his taxes yet. Grom. Phil Brown says, great episode, obviously. Really enjoyed the discussion of the Marvel Black and White mags. That would make an excellent podcast. I agree, Phil. I hope it's something you'll consider when Treasury Cast is finished. No, Phil. Speaking of which, I'm sad to hear there's only a year of Treasury Cast left. This is my favorite comic book podcast. Thank you. I discovered it around the same time I started collecting treasuries, and it fueled an addiction, you too, to buying up back issue treasuries whenever I could find them. I'll sincerely miss this podcast when it's gone, but I will treasure, see what I did there, every episode that's left. Well, thank you, Phil. I very appreciate the kind words. Andy Leyland says, sad it's ending, glad it's ending on your terms. Great episode as usual. Love me some Conan. Thank you, Andy. Eric says, regarding the pinup gallery and identifying the uncredited artist, I looked up the issue on the Green Comics database, and they list the artists in the gallery as, in order, Alex Nino, Vincente Alcazar, Gray Morrow, Tony DeZuniga, and Tim Conrad. Thank you for the info, Eric. Chris Franklin from this very network says, great discussion, gents. Sounds and looks like a great comic. I was never much of a Conan guy as a kid, but I sure do appreciate the stories and art much more now. This is definitely pushing the envelope, and it's odd that I never noticed the treasuries existed outside of the CCA. Oh, and fun fact, the image of Conan from the Splash, sans the Clinging Maiden, was used by Mego on their Conan packaging and to cross-sell the Cimmerian and other Marvel Mego figures. And he provides a photo of the Conan box. And yeah, good. You were just so good at that stuff, Chris. Yeah, man, the Conan Mego doll. I mean, Down Bumgarten, of course, from this very episode, chimes in. He says, I certainly had the Conan Mego figure as a kid. I mean, come on. No other Mego figure came with a battle axe. Yeah, I can't remember whether I had Conan. I'm pretty sure I did because I had like almost all the Migos. And I'm sure I lost half the accessories because he's like Green Arrow. He came with like a lot of stuff. And the thing I love about him is, first of all, the box is bright orange, kind of a weird Conan color. But I love how angry his face is. Go Google Mego Conan. You'll see he's got that perfectly Conan face. Like, I love that they did a separate head sculpt just for him. It's just an absolutely beautiful figure that Mego did. Super Captain says, I've never gotten into Conan despite being a huge fan just about every other thing that Roy Thomas ever worked on. Nonetheless, I enjoyed the episode. I am one of those kids who kept Richie Rich in business for several years into the late 70s and early 80s. I didn't buy all of them, but I had a bunch, especially over the digest. As for the news of this podcast, imminent, and I am taking the attitude, don't be sad because it's ending. Be happy that it happened. Thanks for many hours of listening. Happiness. Thank you, Super Captain. Ado Boznar says, okay, first things first, no. And then he has about 60 O's. And that's because we're in the last year of Treasury Cast. Otherwise, though, good show. The Conan Treasury is always a good topic because they always contain such good material. Case in point, A Witch Shall Be Born is a great story. I have it in the first black and white phone book published by Dark Horse. I wouldn't mind having a color version, though, which leads me to ask, didn't all of the Conan Treasury just mainly feature colorized stories from Savage Sword? Also, reprinting some of the Conan newspaper strips is a great added feature. It's too bad that the Dark Horse volume that collects them all is long and a print. Used copies are prohibitively expensive. In closing, let me reiterate back to the extended nose. So sorry, Ado. Sorry to disappoint. And then he mentions, Ado comes back and he says, hate to disappoint Down, but I've never seen anyone hungover with deer caught in the headlights expression that Conan is making in that back cover image. Yeah, suck it, Baumgarten. Rocky Starwind says, I think anyone hung on a cross would be scared. See, there we go. Once again, Down, another vote for me. Siskoid from this network says, who bought all those Richie Rich comics? My aunt, apparently, because every few months she would drop by with a 2 to 3 foot tower of Harveys and Archies bound together with a piece of string. She bought everything, but when she was done, she sent them down to us kids, which is how I learned to read English well before my peers. True story. I love the idea of, like, you know, you're learning English, but you're learning about, like, you know, all the stuff that Richie Rich had to be concerned about, like investments and, I don't know, exchange rates, or I don't know. I didn't read Richie. I don't know what goes on in those books. Robert McCarthy says, gee, I hope you get to the little-known Conan versus Rudolph, Night of the Blood Red Light, Vengeance and Venison story. I hope so, too. Frank says, well, it's kind of a shame that you never got around to the giant-sized Kung Fu Bible stories, but I've never spent 9 years on any one job, so what more could we ask of you? I don't think Conan is afraid of the St. Andrew's cross because on balance, the prime emotion on display is still anger. So maybe his butt itches and he can't get the right angle with the available slack. Finally, the Freddy Krueger magazine sold phenomenally well, but was canceled in mid-production of later issues when a higher-up, Jim Galton, got wind that the company was publishing a book about a notorious child murderer and shut it down. I didn't know that. I hope that story's true. That's a great story. Bradley Glenn says, Rob, clearly there was a way to wrap up this awesome podcast series at episode 100 while covering all the treasuries. Simply double up, cover 2 issues per episode and make them 2 or 3 hours long, or triple up. Maybe the last episode would cover, say, 10 treasuries in a 10-hour marathon. Sound like fun? Rob? Oh, I think he fainted. And then Down Bumgarner also unhelpfully chimes in. He says, I think that's an excellent proposition, Bradley. Or for an even easier solution, Rob could unselfishly cut out all his other podcasts, except maybe Mountain Comics and Power Records podcast, of course, and continue with Drudgery Cast unabated. Everyone knows that comics have always been a more popular medium than movies and television and music combined. Funny that you would say that, considering you're a musician, Down. Much fewer people will miss Rob's other pesky podcast. Ouch. And this frees up time for those extra marathon Drudgery episodes. Problem solved. Okay, Down. Scott Arthur says, in a weird coincidence, this issue of Marvel Treasury Edition number 23 with Conan crucified on an X-type cross on the back cover was followed by number 24 with Adam Warlock crucified on an Ankh on the front cover. Oh, and Conan on the back cover just looks surprised. Vultures are awkward on the ground, but they fly pretty fast for something that large and can appear to seem to come out of nowhere. Thank you for the detail on a vulture, Scott. How do you know that? And then finally, Brett Young says, great Joe, Robin Down. I never really read a lot of Conan, but I always thought that the John Buscema art was great. I always figured that Marvel editors went to the bullpen and said, who can draw beautiful women? Okay, who can draw horses? Now who can draw fur underwear? And at that point, Buscema was the only guy with his hands still up. I was always impressed Conan could hoist that double axe over his shoulder without stabbing himself in the back of the back or the neck of the head. That must be why all those blondes dug him. Finally, Richie Rich was a fail son and most likely is currently involved in crypto scams. I think that's right on the money. Anyway, guys, thank you so much for the comments. Big thanks to Chad Comic Foil for coming by and talking about Tarzan. This is a book I wanted to get to, and I really appreciate it. I let him say whatever book you wanted to get to, and he picked this one. It was great because this was something on my list to do. So we had a lot of fun, and I hope you enjoyed it. Of course, you can find all the back episodes of Treasure Cast on our website, fartandwaterpodcast.com. You can subscribe to the show on any podcatcher of your choice. You can find us on Twitter at Drudgery Comics. And then finally, if you want to support the Fire and Water Podcast Network, just go to patreon.com/FW Podcasts. There you can unlock various rewards, one of which will be name checked on a show of your choice. So big thanks to Jeff Pullier, Brett Young, Mark Balbus, Chuck Dill, Gord Tolton, and David S. Gutierrez for their support of the Fire and Water Network. I very much appreciate it. So that is going to do it. Time slot wise, that's even a thing in podcasting. Treasury Cast will now be dropping the final Sunday of every month for the rest of the year. Now that For All Mankind is wrapped up, and that was the show that we ran on the final Sunday of the month, Treasury Cast is taking its place for the rest of the year. So you can rely on whatever the final Sunday is of any given month, that's when the new Treasury Cast will drop. I mean, sometimes the show has been bopped around the schedule, but it's going to be in a quote-unquote regular time slot going forward until we wrap up in episode 100 in early 2025. So anyway, that is going to do it. Thanks everybody for listening. We'll see you next month, but until then, go big or go home.
The jungle. Here I was born. And here my parents died when I was but an infant. I would have soon perished too had I not been found by a kindly she-ape named Kala, who adopted me as her own and taught me the ways of the wild. I learned quickly and grew stronger each day. And now, I share the friendship and trust of all jungle animals. The jungle is filled with beauty and danger and lost cities filled with good and evil. This is my domain, and I protect those who come here. For I am Tarzan, Lord of the Jungle.